opportunity for other departments, elected officials to feed us information to build into that. So that'll be something we keep going. That's something I wanted to do for a number of years, but I haven't had someone to help me do it with the time. So I'm appreciating having Chris in the office.
Next one is engage the community through service and recognition. So the main things that we do each year are Citizen of the Year, National County Government Month, and County Employees Participation in United Way Day of Caring. Do you have anything else that you would like to add in there?
So we regularly have blood drives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that we're engaging the community, but we certainly are participating in helping the community. Okay, and
the community members, there are a number of community members that attend most of this.
Okay. Yeah, because if the last blood drive was any indicator, we had people virtually surprising, and I can't remember the entity who was doing the blood draws, but they were shocked at how busy they were, and there were a lot of walk-ins, people that were in the building for whatever, saw the signage and came upstairs and donated, so it was way above expectation.
And my other thought here was the healthiest walk, because we invited community to participate. I don't know that a lot of community did participate, so I went back and forth on that one. Maybe I'll put it in or not this year.
You could make it more broad and do wellness initiatives.
That's a great idea.
The blood drive falls under that as well.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I think that would be a good way, because if we list it off every event, that might
yes. That's the detail. Okay, yeah. That's the finite editor going.
Like broad bullet points.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry.
No.
Okay. Really good.
And then the last one is enhance emergency communication. So for this, I reached out to a number of people to get some information on what's being done throughout the county in terms of emergency response communication. And I know that they're in the process of improving the 911 radio system. So I did add that in there. That's a really great project that's going on, and I think it should be highlighted, as well as outreach campaigns for Flood Awareness Month, distribution of information post-disaster, kind of general things, but still good.
And the big one on that, too, in addition, all the big ones, the radio system, but the other one is this is the year in which we update the ESF-15, which is the PIO, Public Information Officer, responsibilities of the Emergency Operations Plan for Story County. So working with Keith Morgan and Melissa Spencer, those are those two bullet points, sub-bullet points under that item.
Let's be careful on the improved 911 radio response. We're not going to get a new radio system purchased in calendar year 2018. So let's just be careful how we state that. Clearly, that's what we're working toward. Clearly, it's necessary. But the reality is it's going to be more like calendar year 2019 before something happens there.
Do you want to just add simple work towards the purpose?
Yeah, work towards, I think, is the right way to say it.
Are there additional questions? No, I'm laughing.
Go ahead.
All right. Maybe sometime in the next month or so, we should get a new photo taken.
Yeah.
We have a better day.
Were we haggard that day?
Yes, we were. So anyway, this was a fun day. And no questions. Good job. I mean, do you want to do that before we publish this?
No.
Okay. Go with it.
Outstanding. Thank you guys so much. It is really, really outstanding to know that we're in our fourth or fifth year of having a communication plan, which seems to grow and become more effective every year, and it's something that most aren't doing. Both of you guys are to be commended for your work, not only putting together the plan, but in implementing the plan. As you will do for the next 12 months. If there's nothing else, I'd take a motion to adopt as presented. Oh, no, to adopt with the additions that Supervisor Olson has.
I would move consideration of our 2018 communication plan with the aforementioned changes.
I second.
You guys clear on what the extra bullet points that Laura's requested to put in? Good. Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It passes with the noted changes. Great job, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You don't want to stay for this one?
Is Keith coming up?
Boy, Barb wasn't here. He's not here. So our next item is discuss consideration of, I like saying coop cog, continuity of operations plan and continuity of government plan exercise. Leah?
Yeah, Keith didn't have any intention of being here, but he is, I think, in active shooter training right now, and Melissa's absent. So what is before you is an outline that Keith essentially put together with my very rudimentary feedback and input. It is a training exercise that will help us really delve in deep and begin to own the CUPCOG as a countywide entity. I do want to note that there was some confusion. Keith received some input from some department heads wondering about the training on January 13th. It's not scheduled. So the scenario is we have conditions that begin deteriorating with the winter storm January 13th this year. And the outline that's on the board's agenda today just explains what happens. We kind of toyed with the idea of not putting it out there so people wouldn't know in advance what was happening. But obviously, if people read this, they're going to know that we go into a total blackout nationwide. That extends over a period of time through a cyber attack. The reality is that is the reality. So the CUPCOG training exercise is 3 training days. The first one would be May 2nd. But on May 2nd, the stage would be set that this is actually as of this January 13th. So hence the confusion and why people reached out. May 2nd would be a half day, and that really is dusting off the CUPCOG, making sure everyone brings their copy. We basically kind of read it together and understand it. So the departments will be responsible for identifying, as they already have on the CUPCOG, who needs to attend that. Training day 2 would happen at the end of August, and it would be a half day. And then training day 3 takes us into 2019. February 13th, and that's the full day. That's when we know there's a blackout situation. We know we have to have a different way of operating in order to go forth. The way this exercise is structured is Keith and I are both the instructors and the directors. Therefore, I do not serve as the CCMT coordinator. And tying to Keith, because both Alyssa Wignall and Deb Schildroth will be wearing a public information officer hat, and I'll be unavailable for that. We need to have someone that can do the CCMT coordinator. I think Noel McClatchy would be a good fit having backup for me. Right now, there's no one in the as a CCMT coordinator. So in those training days, that's the role she would fill. I see some benefit of someone other than me in that role to see how well the CUPCOG functions, because I wrote the CUPCOG. I think I understand what that position entails, but I'm going to come in a little bit biased. And having someone that didn't have the depth of involvement as I did, I think is greatly beneficial. We would probably not do in the EOC because we don't want people to be confused that this is an EOC exercise. They are fundamentally different. What gets really confusing is we may be running both the EOC and CUPCOG at the same time. That reality in this situation, we call it will be, too. So having it outside the EOC, probably running the assessor's conference room, I don't know, because if we're running the EOC, we have this room for the JIC, Joint Information Center. So there's that we need to figure out still. Maybe we'll go outside to McFarland or something. So what we're proposing is this exercise. And then we put out for the 3-day or 7-day review.
Sorry, just a second, Lynn. So we go off-site to McFarland. So if we're truly running the exercise, shouldn't we be doing it where we're really doing it?
Actually, that's a good point.
If the reality is that the EOC is going to be operational as an EOC for the county, in a situation like this, it would be. The conference room next door is going to be the board's PIO. This room is going to be available for public updates. Then we better figure out how we would administer the rest of this building and the things that we're getting on.
That's a good point. Without getting to where the alternate facilities are, Kukkog, that's something that I'll work with Keith to determine the location, how that relates to Kukkog for the exercise. So just as he and Melissa did with the EOC exercise last April, we're bringing it forth to you to basically bless the exercise and training and then send out for a 7-day review period so the people can respond to it and then bring it back and actually officially have it adopted next week.
So that I'm clear, we would have 3 training days, each 2 of them a half day, and one of them would be committing the full day for Story County employees to do this training. But all 3 trainings would involve the exact same date. And the first training would be, this just happens, what's the first things you do? The second one would be, this just happened a few hours ago, the ramifications are just becoming clear, how are you going to handle it? And then the final one would be, okay, now you're really in the day, you've gotten through the initial, you've gotten through the first couple hours, now how are you actually settling in to fill your role and do what you're doing? So, am I seeing that right? And then the other suggestion I would make is something you mentioned. I think it's most beneficial to the county to have you not participate. It's a test of the cause that you wrote. We need you to not be available as a resource. I would suggest that you join Keith Morgan and Melissa Spencer in being the administrators of the exercise and not a part of the exercise. So we can say Leanne Harder happens to be out of town on January 13th when this occurs.
Let's hope it doesn't snow.
I figure it's January 19th of 2019 that we're pretending it is. questions or comments, Ford?
Nothing. It did clear up the timelines and the days because that was another good thing, too. It's just like, yeah.
So you have training Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah, it's just like, am I looking? Because I spun around, looked at the calendar, going like, oh. Just like I need to tell family, I'm not going to be there.
Yeah. So underscore, January 13th is a fictitious date that we're picking to pretend this exercise occurs, and it would be 3 dates, 2 in 2018, and committing one as an expected date in 2019 for this training. Again, this is one of those areas that we hope we never, ever, ever have to go down this path, but as we learned in our full EOC exercise, you'll learn a lot by going through these. I would appreciate it if one of you guys would make the motion to send this out for 7-day review.
I propose that we send out this Kukkog training outline for a 7-day review by staff and for input.
Second.
Motion in the second. Liam, we need anything further, or is that covered for you?
I think that covers it. Thank you.
All right. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We'll send that out for 7-day review. Outstanding. Now let's actually talk about the Kukkog. So, board, as we get started on this, this is one of those areas that, depending on questions, we may need to move into closed session because there are multiple areas in our Kukkog that are not available to the public for understandable reasons that you got some security and some safety concerns. So we're going to start this presentation in open session. We'll stay in open session as long as there's no questions that start to come up. Leanne and I are going to try to monitor that. If we start down a path that appears problematic, we're going to back up and see about a closed session. Leanne, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So I have the introductory slides that were presented in September 2016 when the first Kukkog was adopted. I think it's beneficial. I'm not to take the time, but I just share this again because we do have relatively new board members. Purpose of Kukkog, ensure continuity of essential functions under all circumstances that may disrupt home operations. Everything from this building getting hit by a tornado to a pandemic flu to a cyber attack that takes out our electrical grid nationwide. So it's in essence a baseline for less prepared for a full range of emergencies. allows us to anticipate threats, adapt to sudden changes, increase our overall performance, determine our vital resources, and improve communications. So we went through an iteration of having a KubeCog planning team work with me over a couple of years, really to come up with the first iteration of the KubeCog. I so much appreciate their input and their guidance and really walking through this. And then I went out and met with departments, majority of them. There are some that I just was not, we just did not meet. And from that, I received numerous feedback. I do want to thank, fortunately, Lucy just walked in. The auditor's office gave me an enormous amount of editing, which even though there were like 20 sets of eyes looking at this, things got through. Same with community services. And so a lot of the changes in here, whether in the confidential portion or not, are grammatical changes. I'm not going to go through those. I kept a list of all the changes I made. But because of that, the entire document shifted in pages. And so we had to reprint the whole thing and redact the parts that are confidential. So with that, I'll just, again, the program committee, we followed a planning process. All this has been now taken and put into a toolkit that I'm sharing with ISAC that they will then share with other counties that want to go down KubeCog and that endeavor. So again, as Rick said, Code of Iowa Section 22.7 subsection 50 allows us to have information that's considered sensitive, can jeopardize employees, visitors, persons, or property, remain confidential. And we will clearly monitor the discussions. But if we get to that point, I'll just say that we'll have to talk about that under closed session. That is, though, for your benefit, just four main areas: the essential function section, the alternate facilities, the vital records, and then the annexes, A through R. And those are all department specific, and that is essentially the back half of the plan. So if we get to the point where we're talking essential, one of those four areas, then we do need to take it to closed session. Any questions thus far?
None so far. So the fact that every one of the pages that in my printout here is marked confidential is not really applicable.
Right. I did that so you were well aware that was not the copy that you could share with the public. Once we get it approved, I'll have a redacted copy that's available for the public too. Okay. Just like any good plan has a table of contents. Throughout the plan, you do see an R. That's an area that we encourage elected officials and department heads to look, because there are certain responsibilities that go with their role in this management's plan. I'm going to go through all these kind of fast. So first section is the plan overview. Again, these are minor editing changes that occurred, so I'm not going to point out each of those to you. I really so much appreciate the set of eyes that got on this. When you get to plan maintenance, though, page 12, under the formal review process, it used to say, like the slide says, that we would have a formal report on or prior to August 1st. I changed it to match the fiscal year to June 30th. And then on the bottom, action step number 2, I'm asking in the plan, identify action step that, and this will be updated annually, or we may just say prior to May 31st annually, elected officials and department heads review respective annexes and get proposed changes to me. So that we can keep this, all the information in the annexes correct. Unfortunately, what you're acting on right now does not contain 100% of the annexes that were reviewed by elected officials and department heads. There might be some incorrect or outdated information in annexes. So that will be very important that by May 31st we have that occur. And then I come to you in September with the annual review, August to September. So that's why it's to match the fiscal year and just kind of the mindset we're in.
All right, so let's start there. Anybody have any problem with the date change? That's a substantive change. Anybody have a problem with the day change and the ask that prior to May 31st we'll have the annexes updated from our land acquisitions.
None.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, next section we go into is that confidential section of discretionary functions. So I'll skip that. I can share this, but the questions that were asked of department heads and elected officials is, what is necessary to continue the operations? What's mandated by law? What is the expectation? Those types of questions were asked. And then we get into risk assessments. For this year, this section is not amended because it identifies the risks in the hazard mitigation plan. But we are beginning the update of that plan, so I assume next year this section will be amended if any of the risks change through the risk assessment. But we adopt by reference the risks that are in the hazards identified in the multi-jurisdictional multi-hazard mitigation plan. And then we get to budgeting and acquisition of resources, and then concept of our resource activation management. Resource management of activated plans. There is one thing that has changed, and now I'm on page 33. As I went out and met with elected officials, department heads, the question was raised. We had this KUPCOG management team, how they operate. They operate on consensus, how they operate. So I just simply put in their meetings with the CCMT, follow Robert's Rules of Order. That's the standard procedure and to guide them.
Now, I have a follow-up question, but I'm not sure whether it goes here or whether it would be under confidential related to page 33. Do you want me to hold
page
the question?
Page 33 is not confidential. So
page 33 is not confidential.
Nope. Okay.
I'm going to ask you to walk me through something. All right? So, as we've got it set up from high to low there on the graphic, all right, so first of all, be the Board of Supervisors. So two of us can in some way make contact to have a meeting, whether it be by phone, walkie-talkie, whatever, right? That's the level that we'll try first. Next, we go to the chair if we are not Marty and I, or vice versa, whoever is not available, right? Okay. If it was, say it would be Rick not available and I'm not available, then it would be Marty, okay? And I'm just using because we're the ones sitting in these chairs right now.
Right.
All right. So then it would go third to me, but then there, and I don't see that as part of the KUPCOG management team, but it is listed somewhere else in there, and it says there's a different graphic, and it says then the third supervisor with the CCMT team. Okay, so I would like to just clarify here, is that third supervisor a member of the CCMT team, or is it that I would expect all of us would try and consult with anybody we could, all right, you know, given having enough time. Or is it that third supervisor would consult with the CCMT team, but it would not be like a necessarily straight vote situation where the majority of the CCMT team votes to do something?
No, basically the CCMT has one vote, the way the structure is. And then you as remaining supervisor has the other vote, so that we have two or three that can take action.
I gotcha. Okay.
This is where this is really unique. There's the Code of Iowa is silent. So this was a solution that I worked with Ethan Anderson to
sure.
come up with. And I mean, let's hope it'll work if it's ever needed. But and that really kind of led to the question, how does the CCMT work?
Right.
And now if they have followed Robert's rules, their consensus basis, and followed standard parliamentary procedure, and there's one vote that comes out of them. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, so tell me if I'm visualizing this the right way, Leanne. If there's two supervisors available, then this board functions as this board functions. Mm-hmm. You've got a majority of the board functioning, and it goes. If you don't have that, then any one supervisor on their own doesn't have the authority to do anything, so the CCMT serves in the role of that second supervisor, allowing the county to go ahead and function.
So they serve two roles. They have two hats. One, as Rick just outlined, the other one is help to identify resources and keep the plan moving along and keep us activating. So that is basically a check-in for everyone to keep us on the same page. And so two important roles that CCMT has.
Okay, super. Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Activation decision tree, activation procedures and policies, nothing has changed in there. If it was, again, it was grammatical.
Right.
Alternate facilities is the next step, next section we get to. You all had a chance to review the plan. There were some modifications made to that. And this is the part that is confidential if you have questions in that regard. What I think I can say is the modifications to a plan and the changes in primary relocation facility result from changes that emergency management made with use of county facilities.
Yeah, a space became available that was not previously available. County space that was held for emergency management to use. Emergency management has made other arrangements, and so that freed up that space for the county to use if we need to. That's the change.
Yes. Yes.
It's hard to do this when you've got to be able to make.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, alternate facilities is just if this building's not available, or HC, Justice Center, all the county owned facilities not available, where do we go? Reconstitution is basically how do we get there, what do we do, getting business up and going as the new normal. Orders of succession, this is, Laura, so you were just asking about this. This is where that kind of quasi-judicial board supervisors becomes in being, and if those two vacancies remain, that all falls under the code bio to fill those vacancies, auditor, recorder, treasurer. Delegations of authority, these are outlined in the annexes, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit when I get to plan action steps, too. And this is really important that the annexes get checked on every year. If staff changes, the delegations of authority need to be addressed. I did ask Ethan Anderson because one point that was made in here was that we would actually codify the delegation of authority and that CUPOG management team order of structure. He thought since it was adopted by the board, it really isn't necessary to build into the code of ordinances, which I really appreciate. I think that makes it a lot easier. Human capital, if you recall that slide, the weakest link, the first human element, capital element is the greatest link. So Alyssa did look at the human resources continuity policies and did know on page 62 when those will be updated or how they've been updated or where they're addressed. This actually occurs in two areas, too, when we talk about something in the confidential standpoint as well. But it's part of the human resources. Vital records section are all confidential. I do want to note, though, I did receive this phone call from Nancy Miller. I appreciate her feedback. She just suggested that, and Nancy can correct me if I mistake this, that the practice of the county should be that we have redundancy with all of our documents and data, and that be stored off-site, which we are doing. The data is confidential. It is being done. We do have redundancy, but that is a great reminder. And it is a standard business practice that if we're not doing it, we're making sure to build that in too. Interoperable communications, how we continue IT and communications. Really no changes on that. And that gets us to test training and exercise program. Again, just modifications of grammatical in this section. There's some extra spaces, apparently. But then the plan action steps. And now if you go to page 89. I took a different approach this time. Last time, I did make a copy for you on your, I put up on your work area. These are the current plan access. They say within 3 months, within 6 months, and I'll do a check on with those here as we go. Really, I related it back to the page number and numbered them, which we didn't have before. But so this first one, when contracting with vendors or external agencies, that was one of our plan action steps currently. The next one, I'm not going to go through each one unless you'd like me to. But I can say if you go through our current one, we do have two, and this is minor, but we have two that are pretty large that are done. One is done, but it needs to be built into a work program that gets looked at every 6 or so months, and that's a mega calling tree. And I have not looked at that, and we've had some staff turnover. That one has been done, and then the generator study at HSC has been done too. I did talk to Lisa. I actually did not know that funding for the supply kits was included in the fiscal year 18 budget last year. I just found that out last week. So that is actually something that we will strive by the end of the fiscal year to get those supply kits purchased and pre-positioned. So that is, I would have been on top of that one. That was something I missed through the budgeting review. So, sorry. It says change is good. So that means we'll change to the next line.
So it's one of my questions.
So these pages are plan action steps. A through R, the individual food product plans, again, all confidential. I did my best to, if I knew there was a staff change, reach out to that department. But I'd like each elected official and department to look at this, again, by May 31st.
Right, and then we'll come back and do this exercise again in September.
Yeah, and I really hope we don't have to reprint like we do right now, which is fine. So again, if there's questions on those four sections, essential functions, alternate facilities, vital records, or annexes, we'll need to go into closed session. Next steps are to accept today's annual review. And I kept on putting this off because I knew it would take a lot of time to get before, and your agendas have been very packed. And so it is now December. I had it ready to go in October, but so just so you know that it is an annual review. And then plan action steps, I'd like to communicate those with elected officials and department heads and have them understand what's expected of them. And then obviously I need to reprint the plan with a redacted copy along with that.
Super.
Other questions?
So from a formatting perspective, have we considered, Leanne, going from page numbers to section and page within a section, where when we make changes, all we got to do is reprint that
section? That's a good idea. I actually, I think you said that last year.
I don't know.
If you take action today, you would want to include that. I can make that change prior to printing.
Anything in the confidential, so anything in the non-confidential areas that we need to talk about further, anything in the confidential areas that we need to talk about before we take action?
This is purely, once again, grammatical, all right, and it might appear in both sections, and that is, you can do a word search for myriad. We've got consistently through this, at least what I saw was a myriad of, and actually myriad means much, many, so a many of, so you get rid of and of. It's myriad solutions, myriad responsibilities, not a myriad of, just one of those little long spans to pick up and run with. And the other thing I was wondering about, like this action plan that you it's all in capital letters, and it is in the previous comment. Is there a reason that we are switching between using a capital and lowercase font in some sections and all caps in another?
No, just I wanted to maintain it consistent. When I had it in blocks in each page, they were on in caps, and when I copy and pasted, it was in the formatting, and I didn't want to retype everything.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
I just, my part.
You know,
so it's still free. Yeah, I can retype it all. I didn't want to change the formatting, and
I wouldn't go for a retype on that. Okay, thank you.
That's just little itty bitty edit stuff.
Perfect.
Nothing on
content. In the confidential areas? Okay. So then I take a motion to approve. approve changing the page numbers to section and page, and with the grammatical lesson that you gave us off the work area.
I would make that motion with the change in the section, how we organize it, and also the grammatical changes.
Second.
Motion to second. Any further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Thanks, Leanne.
Leanne, this is an amazing job.
Thank you.
Good job.
Yes, it's one of those that you wish everybody could see the whole thing.
Yeah, really. Yeah, although hopefully nobody has to ever see the whole thing.
Would you like me to share with you the toolkit that I'm sending to ISAC? I mean, put it on a future agenda? And,
yeah. Okay. I think it's completely appropriate. And tell everybody exactly what ISAC has asked you to do. It's a great conference.
Iowa State Association of Counties, ISAC, did, Keith and I went down sometime last year and presented the county's CUPAC and BAKE concept to were the auditors there too? It was the supervisors, emergency management. Supervisors, emergency management directors at annual conference of ISAC. ISAC then had a lot of people coming to them saying, can we get copies of Story County's plan? Which I did distribute a redacted copy to them. But then they said, would you consider putting a toolkit together that ISAC can use to read for, as counties out? So I, the board did add that to my work program, and in my spare time, I figured it, how to do it using the tools that I had, and that's, I'm going to just drive it down there and deliver it, because it's too large to email, and it's all digital.
Heck of a compliment. Thank you. Yeah, I believe it'd be appropriate for you to share that with us as we go. All right, so, Morris, I'm going to ask you. Next item is yours. I'm to the point that I'm ready for a three-minute recess.
Mm-hmm, that's good.
Okay. Yeah. Three-minute recess, and then we'll come back.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go. Okay, next item on our agenda is discussion and consideration of proposed principles of operation for the Board of Supervisors. Morris, you brought us 9 points here that you'd like to see us consider. Take it away.
Okay. As we've all operated over the last year, there have been things that I have asked about, questions at various points, either sought more information on, have not been familiar with what has been on written, etc. So I made a list here about items that I'd like for us to consider as adopting as more formal operating principles. I started, first of all, with the chairperson, understanding the role of the chairperson. I am well aware that my list is likely not complete, okay? Very, right. And so I think it's the key point here is that we hold the same certificate of election to perform the same duties, so that in identifying the tasks that the chairperson, or in his absence, the vice chair, alone is able to perform, would help in clarifying for us and the public to also ascertain not only what the chair himself for this year, because this is only for 2018, all right, would do, be expected to do, be authorized to do, as opposed to what can be undertaken by maybe any of us to provide assistance or leadership to staff or to members of the public. And I did look at chapter 331.301 to 0.304, and I did not see it specifying rules for the chair. So if there is some disagreement about where it specifies rules for the chair, please, you know, I'd be welcome to that. But as I said, I don't think this list is complete by any means, all right? That's why offering it up as a draft and talking about it.
Sure. Yeah, and so I appreciate that, Morris. So we do all hold the same certificate of election, But by virtue of this board organizing itself with a chair, so a board does not technically have to have a chair. It says, you know, you should organize, but not having a chair does not preclude the board from being able to conduct business. Boards everywhere, I think every board in the state of Iowa, every board of supervisors in the state of Iowa, and I'll look to Wayne because he spent a lot of time on that, has a chair. Not all have a vice chair, but most have a vice chair. And the rationale and the expectation there is that the chairperson, as elected by this board, giving them a little different level of responsibility, will make sure that the wishes of the board are carried out to fruition in the county. Do things like set the agenda. But you're also the initial point of contact when there's a question about where something goes, how it's done. For us, we approve claims for drainage districts and any claims that are coming through the Board of Supervisors office. We approve travel vouchers. The list is, I don't know that I can sit here and I can give you an exact list, but what's important to note is the chair of the board is not, never has been, and I believe never will be, empowered with anything more than any other board member. They're simply the point of contact that carries out the board's wishes. I think that's really clear. My fear with starting to enumerate specifically is you're always going to leave something out. And the reality is this board right here, in every board, has the ability to check a chairperson if they feel like there's something that chair is doing that was not set forth by the Board of Supervisors, right? We talked about that a couple times. And I get this general feeling you have, and I think you know full well, I think you're wrong in this general feeling you have that somehow there's a different level of authority among each of us. I happen to be sitting in the chair role now for the last, at least parts of the last 4 years, there is some responsibility that goes with it, but there's really no authority. The authority all comes from this board, and no chairperson can do anything that this board hasn't laid out for them, but the chair is, in fact, the representative of the board. So that's my thoughts. I get concerned. So everything that you lay out here, we do in fact do, but we do so much more here in Story County, what our expectation is of the chair, and I get concerned when we start too specifically. Is there something on your list that you feel like we're not doing right now? I'm talking about number one, point one.
Okay. No, it was more in helping identify where the line goes, you know, about what is the chair's role, and which is number G, if I can point you to,
yes.
Serving as formal point of contact with the Board of Supervisors. You just listed several under that. That's why I phrased that way. Is that appropriate for being doing that? So some of this has been practical, this observation that a lot of things are brought to you. And I understand that some of that is with seniority also. Okay, so as we go down to number two, it might become clearer what I may be speaking about having staff at least reach out more to involve the other two supervisors, Marty and I, okay, and some of the problem solving that I think is being automatically brought to you because you have the background of and then I'd like to see Marty and I to gain knowledge with understanding some of the challenges, some of the information that's brought.
Okay.
Well, before we go there.
Yeah.
Okay. Loris, that is a process of self-awareness, self-education, that I would have to point you at the staff to tell you their story of their interaction with me in the sense that you can make yourself aware by contact with them. If an issue comes to your purview, you become aware of something, you suspect or know that Rick is operating on it, you have the ability to reach out and self-educate yourself. You shouldn't be a receiver of knowledge, you should be a seeker of knowledge. They're not going to bring this to you. They assume that you're doing this of and by yourself. So I would lay it at your feet that, I mean, what has helped me perform to the level that I am performing at with hopes of aspiring to better is that I seek it. I go out, I make the discussions, I engage, and the thing is it becomes a crosstalk by one supervisor with a department head in regards to an issue that may be in their department. and nothing more.
Right. And that brings up a good point, because Rick and I had this conversation reiterated just 6 weeks ago, which was a helpful reminder. We all could hear each other in our offices. So, you know, the kind of our agreement is if the door's open, shame on you, is there something you don't want someone to give you over here? If the door is shut, even if you can hear it, you try to plug your ears and not hear it, right?
There's an expectation.
Yeah, there's an expectation there. Okay. And so, Marty, thank you for pointing that out, that sometimes when I do hear that we're is working on something, I deliberately try to ignore it because I feel like I'm eavesdropping when I should just go out and seek that information and education on its own. So that is the point, also part of it, as far as learning to be educated on it. And I'm glad to hear that you are received by the staff, that the staff are willing to answer that question, even though it may be Rick that the problem has been brought to. So that
I go with hat in hand, and I ask them. I start off in the conversations, and I'll have it with Jerry when he comes up. I can go down there with a smile and say, "What's going on?" And next thing you know, I have a, and you can do that with anybody, and you find as you grow a relationship that your body of knowledge and expertise grows with the interactions.
Okay.
But I need to, of course, I need to push back just a little with this presumption that in every circumstance, every issue starts with me, because I don't believe it does. I don't believe in all situations staff come to me first. And if I'm not around, they just sit on it until I get back. I can think, for both of you guys, I can think of times where staff has started with each of you. Now, less with you, and especially less with you over the recent months.
Mm-hmm.
But I can think of multiple occasions where staff starts in a different place. Now, by the fact that I've been around for 8 years, that's going to carry some of it. The fact that I'm the chair of the board and have been, like I say, for most of the last 4 years, carries it. But I know when Wayne and Paul and I were serving together, yeah, the chair of the board, it was more about the item that we were talking about, and they would start with Wayne or Paul or I, depending on what the item was. And I think we've got the opportunity. I think that 6 months ago we were operating that way. I think we've got the opportunity to get back to that, operating that way. And frankly, I think that's the way it should be. There are things that absolutely start with the chair of the board or with Rick Sanders because of his interest, expertise, whatever. But there's things that should start with you guys, and I would get really, really reluctant to start to define where. And I know I'm over-dramatizing this, but almost take a number out front. Oh, it's Supervisor A, so I've got to wait to see this supervisor for this item, or Supervisor B. How about if we just let our staff do their jobs, and if they need some help, get some help from whoever can help them, with the caveat that none of the three of us have the authority to give anybody direction or make decisions that bind this board or this county to anything.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good on that. And then, we can go in order, or we can jump down to number 9, because that was related to the same.
This is your deal, okay. So but let's make sure that as we deal with it, we deal with it. Have we dealt with number 1?
We have dealt with number 1.
Have we dealt with number 2?
We have dealt with
number
2. All right,
now wherever you want to go.
Okay, I think I'd like to go down to number 9, because it's along the same basic theme about everyone being aware of what's happening, okay? And I know that I have not always been good about telling each of you, not having a discussion that would be against the open meetings law, okay? But just keeping you aware that constituent A asked me about something and I referred it to Deb, or I'm sorry, our external director of operations. I referred it to planning and zoning. I referred it to special projects, okay? And so so if we all did that, I know Marty, you're verbally good at that. Rick, you're really great at handing us handouts from the meetings you've been at, which I really appreciated. I tend to give more updates at the board table, so there's a difference in style. But I just wanted to reaffirm that. I know I'm going to work on it harder this year to be more consistent on it. It's not just what are we doing according to our calendar or who we may be seeing or whatever, but keeping enough of an awareness so in part we're not duplicating efforts, on that.
I suspect that you are going to have people that reach out to you to discuss issues as Rick will have people that will, Rick-specific, Laura-specific, Marty-specific. And at some point, yes, if there's anything that comes of it, yeah, it would rise to the level. Here's the information. This is where I've been asked to look, or this is the questions involving. But as far as just the individual solicitations, I think that's the public's purview to do. And I think that's why we're here. We have the ability through electronic medium, through our phones, through personal contacts, to conduct the business of the county in regards to information or direction.
Yeah.
And how we inform each other, I think some stuff rises to the level, hey, you should know that I'm doing this. Clearly, I agree. But there's a lot of things that really are non-entities. There are ships in the night that really don't go anywhere. Because you probably don't care that I was out delivering maps of Grant 5 on Sunday afternoon to different farmers. I can talk about that on my board update. Once again, you laugh about that because you just assume, okay, if somebody's going to do it, probably Marty's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's it. And does it need to be discussed here? Probably not.
The second of my thought related to this has to do with assignments to the staff. So that's the other part of it, is let us know if you've referred something to staff to share that information. And I get concerned sometimes that with three of us all referring to staff, it can become overwhelming maybe. I don't want to speak for the staff. I just know that I could envision a week where if all three of us are bringing heavily projects that require a lot of heavy research, a lot of discussion back or forth or whatever. And so I do try to be cognizant of what I'm asking the staff, and because I don't want to put more work on them if in fact, or you know, how much research. So that has been a concern of mine on all of our staff direct reports, okay, because they are all so conscientious. None of them work straight 8 to 5 hours, and so I'm always cognizant of that. So I thought that would be another way in helping, I guess, in at least in my mind, kind of keeping track of what somebody else may have been asked to deal with.
Well, I don't want us to get in a position, and it's a term you've heard previously, of a walking forum.
Well, I don't want to be a walking forum.
The thing is, that's not what you know we're trying to do, but the thing is, I think clearly to come here on a decision-making body that we need to inform ourselves, and if that through that process we are visiting with the department specific in regards to what may come, then that I believe that's our job as I see it.
Okay.
Yeah, and so just four quick points there, Laura. So I think that in real broad strokes, I tend to agree with you. I appreciate you acknowledging how hard I work to make sure that I keep you guys updated. And you hear me use the phrase a lot with you guys, both of you. Hey, you may want to educate yourself on X.
Right.
You may want to look into Y. You may want, And I think we all need to work hard to do that, because as I've committed to both of you guys on multiple occasions, it is each of our responsibility to make sure that all of us have access to the same information to get to the same decision in the same way. We don't get to debate it away from this table, but we get to all have access to the same information. So really working hard to do that. I agree with the informed. But when it comes to referring something to staff,
mm-hmm.
I think it is exactly appropriate. If it falls within the staff's job description, so I'm going to pick on Dale. So we have an auto accident in one of our county vehicles, and it very clearly falls to Deb that she's going to deal with getting the quotes and making sure that we're going through the process. Well, absolutely, when that information comes to me, I refer it directly to Deb, and then I'm out of it. I don't tell you guys about it because Deb's just doing her job, and I feel very strongly that we need to get out of the way for our staff to do their jobs. Now, if it's a different kind of item, a great example would be you and the animal control ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Marty and I needed to be informed that you were working on that. That was taking extra staff time. It was a little beyond the scope of Sue McCaskey's job description. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, we needed full buy-in. But if it is somebody calls you because there's dogs running loose out in the country somewhere, and you pick up the phone and call Sue, I don't need to know that. And so trying to figure out that line. Wayne, you came up because you want to say something here.
I really do appreciate the conversation and what it's going right at this point. I would caution you on one area. When I first read this, I saw a lot of things I really liked about the concept. What I remember And this is something you might need to think about with legal counsel. Sometimes when there's a communication between a constituent about an issue, and one of you, whether it's the chair or whatever, responds, and then you CC the other person about your response, you need to be a little careful about what you're saying at that point because of that potential walk in quorum, and you're now expressing whether you agree or disagree or what have you. And I think the idea, and in the past we've been very good about this, but there have always been a little gray line sometimes when we get so intent on explaining our point of view, and you're usually good at saying, well, in my opinion, you know, I feel this way, but what does that mean when I read it that you've already said this is my opinion? And so I think that we need to be careful about those kind of sharing emails when we're communicating with constituents. But I like the idea of saying, I received a call from Citizen X about this particular issue. It's been referred to the engineer. It's been referred to so-and-so. Hopefully a resolution will occur. Then, if I'm concerned, I can reach out to that person, or I can say to the other department head, hey, check with Marty or Loris and update them so that, you know, we don't have that appearance of being discussed outside of
here. You're 100% right. It's funny.
Actually, it's just I like the fact that Wayne's counseling us to disconnect ourselves and necessarily but still giving us a path to educate ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, what it turns in is, you know, we have these people that run their departments rather well, and through communications with them on an individual basis, we can all still know the very same thing.
That's right. Yeah. The number of emails, Wayne, that I've sent this year that's come from somebody to all of us where I've just said, thank you so much for the email, we'll look into it, but we're not going to respond totally. And then generally what I'll do is I'll send that response replying to all, and then I'll send a follow-up response just between me and the person who made the request. Because each of us, and you were great at this in your time on the board, Wayne, each of us have a responsibility to deal with the constituents as we see fit. And much of that information is appropriate to share with the board. Some of it's not. Some of it is somebody's reaching out to us because they've got a concern that they want us to look into, and all of us have some of that. And so putting a broad, brave-based policy that says we shall or we will gets problematic. I'm really encouraged, Loris, I got to tell you, to hear that you do think we are doing a good job with this most of the time. I think we need to stay the course on it. We need to absolutely endeavor to make sure that each other has the information that we need. But we do, you said a few weeks ago, we all have the right to our own personality and our own style. We need to recognize that as well. So have we dealt with number nine?
We are good.
Okay. Okay. What's next?
Thank you, Wayne.
Okay. Thanks, Wayne.
Yeah. It's helpful, very helpful, to have the voice of long experience.
Absolutely.
Okay, so going to what the next one is, I believe it's number three, supervisors to work with staff to identify informal and unwritten policies, rules, and operating processes in use and bring them to us for discussion. A couple times this last year, we've had kind of discussions about what's informal policy. Rick and I think I have had, and one was on how we handle the evaluations of direct reports. Another one was how appointments to boards and commissions, which did come to the board and was very clearly discussed and then very clearly discussed the other way or voted the other way. So I'd like to give you a more recent example here. It came up. I was contacted by a constituent who's been dealing with the county engineer about a right-of-way purchase, and she's not happy on the price. And so she headed for the board of supervisors office, and I happened to be the one who walked in the front door, actually downstairs, and she was after us. So one of the things that has come up during this whole conversation, because our external director of operations and our county engineer have been doing a great job of handling it. They've had a conversation with Ethan Anderson. So, but it did come up that there was some comments made during a phone call between Deb and Darren Moon and I, okay, about how that we were following what appeared to be an informal policy of one way of handling disagreements about right-of-ways.
right-of-way crisis. Okay, and I don't want to go into any more because we have an email back from Ethan Anderson saying that there is some confidentiality because we're talking about negotiation to the county of a paying crisis. So, but in general, so it, the conversation left me with the impression that we may have an informal policy going forward about a preference of handling it one way based upon one supervisor's long term, here Rick, you know, you being here Rick, about one way of your preference of handling it as opposed to exercising other options available to the county. And I'm just telling you this is a conversation and I can't really say any more because of it gets into the negotiations. So what it sounded like to me is this is something that when we get to this point with this person, it will come to the Board of Supervisors unless the resolution is found soon. But it did bring up the thought about, I wonder what else is out there that maybe the staff thinks is an informal policy that they should be automatically following, as opposed to something that maybe in the past had been done a few times. And really, we, the board, should have the philosophical discussion about which way to go. Are you understanding the difference here? Is that maybe it's
right, but I, so I think, are you ready for me?
Yes, go for it.
So I think you and I probably are defining things a little differently. And I'm going to try to use, without knowing all of this, I'm going to try to use your example. So my view of the acquisition of right-of-way is pretty simple. There's state law that governs the acquisition of right-of-way.
Right.
But it is absolutely squarely and clearly part of the job description of our county engineer to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't call that a policy. I call that a job description. And I firmly believe that when supervisors start meddling, and I'm probably incorrectly using the word meddling, but when we start inserting ourselves to the what, where, and most importantly, how our employees, when operating within their job description, how they go about achieving those tasks in their job description, I think we're making a huge mistake. And what I'm hearing you say is that you want a policy that governs how, where, and when our employees will respond to any situation, because you're calling it a policy, and I'm calling it part of their job. I'm saying that for our direct reports, Dev Shildroth, Alyssa Wendell, and Leanne Harder, they have job descriptions, right? Mm-hmm. They have tasks. Leanne brings us an annual work page every year, mm-hmm. and it should be our expectation that they achieve those goals, those things, but we ought to stay out of what their day-to-day, minute-by-minute processes look like in order to achieve those goals. And that's a philosophical difference that I think you and I have.
Right, right. I think I can provide a little more information on this particular situation. Actually, the request from this resident was wanting to know what the process was. So I wasn't interjecting myself into that too with the county. The question had been, what is our process and do we have, what are our alternatives? And in the statement there for the conversation, it was around there. Okay. So, once again, I just wanted to, I think that based upon what was said, I believe that we need to talk about this. And there's one about how we end up resolving this particular resident situation in our negotiations. There's also then just making sure is that at least that we don't have, there is no informal policy, there is no preference about a way to handle it unless the board indicates there's a preference to handle it. So not just one supervisor.
So I can agree with that,
right,
as long as you and I can agree that it's not our job to tell our staff, here's your responsibility, and here is A, B, C, D, E of how you're going to do that responsibility.
Correct.
Our expectation should be they're going to achieve whatever that responsibility is, without us micromanaging how they get there.
I think I'm with you on most of it. If I say anything more, you'll realize a real specific involved in here that I think is related to the negotiation.
Well, yeah, and I'm not suggesting for a second that, I mean, we just dealt with a policy today for employee assistance.
Right.
There's continually policies, but I get concerned more when I see something that we're going to work with staff to identify informal and unwritten policies. Well, that sounds like a gigantic task to me, and it sounds like micromanagement, or at least gives us the opportunity to try to micromanage. And I would rather deal with policies when we find out we got a hole in one of our processes and something that's happened, then let's deal with it as it comes before us.
Okay, and that's, I'm comfortable with that because I think a hole in the process is good. Yeah, that's number three.
I didn't bring my others in front of my desk.
It's okay.
I'm just following along.
Okay.
I've got an answer. Nancy Miller came up. Nancy, would you like to comment on number three?
Absolutely.
Y'all know me, so I don't have to introduce
you. Yeah, we just have to introduce ourselves, Nancy, and stay close to the microphone.
Yeah. I remember.
All right.
Okay, Nancy Miller, 2354 600th Avenue, Nevada. Okay. Regarding number three, here's the difference. It's called macro management versus micromanagement. Your job as supervisors, as I see it, is macro management. Our turnover in employees in Story County government is about that much. In other words, everybody that I've been in contact with has been here for a book of years.
That's just because they love working with Wayne.
Okay, I'll give you that one, Wayne.
Nice shout out.
But the turnover is extremely low. Therefore, you don't have to do anything but macromanage. Passing on some information from a constituent to that department head is certainly appropriate. For you to attempt to come to a resolution with any particular constituent is micromanaging, not to be done. To give them specific, to go see the department heads and say, you know what, here's what we're going to do, and I want you to write this up, and by God, I want you to follow. That's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. Your job is to macromanage. It is not to go out and dig up projects to bring to the other supervisors. The way projects come to this board of supervisors is from associations, groups within the community, even cities. I've heard projects come from Story City and Gilbert and yada, 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 over and over. But that's where they come from. Even as you sit as a liaison to an agency, a commission, and so on, it is not your job to say, hey, I think that's a great idea. Your job is simply to say, you know what, if you feel that that's a great idea, then put it together and bring it to the board, present it to the board, and then we're going to do a couple of things with it. One, we might send it back for more work to be done on that project. Number two, we might simply approve or deny it. But that's the way it works. That's called macro management. That's all for now.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
I like your passion. All right. So are we done with number three?
Yes.
Okay. Which one is
next? Number three.
Just observational. I hate throwing it out into the public domain for, because people are going to watch this. They do. They do. And I'm not the wordsmith, you are, Loris. There's a creepy, to me, inference that we have. There's a maybe or a might be processes or something that we're doing that has been done historically that operates below the surface of how we conduct county's business.
Okay.
Because that's your suspicion?
No, the comment that was made to me was indicative that we had options in how to deal with right-of-way in general about how to handle it when there's a disagreement in price. So I think we can all say that's
a negotiation.
Right. Okay, so
let's be really, really careful, though.
I understand. Okay. And that one option was being selected over another one, possibly under employees.
Right, but by whom?
Huh?
So there's multiple ways to build a bridge, right?
Right.
Every
right.
bridge is not built exactly the same.
Right.
But that does not mean that it's our job to establish a policy on, in every situation, we're going to build a bridge this way. It's our job to employ a county engineer who will make those decisions based on
correct.
In front of them.
Correct.
So using that for this situation,
yes.
So I would agree with you that there was a problem if Darren Moon, our county engineer, had been directed by one of us to use a particular method to get to achieving his goal, which is to acquire the right-of-way. But the reality is that has not happened. Darren Moon is operating as the county engineer, trying to figure out the best, from a multitude of possibilities, the best mechanism, and I think that's completely appropriate.
I agree it's completely appropriate if all the mechanisms are considered.
Right, but that's his consideration. We've asked him to do his job.
Yeah.
If he's not doing his job, then we deal with that, and I'm going to Nancy, on a macro level, we deal with that. But none of us have the expertise to dictate, and I'm going to use a county engineer, but I would apply it equally to all of our staff. None of us have the expertise to dictate to any of our staff how appropriately how they're going to do their job.
I agree with that. The statement that was made three times when being asked about why a particular way was being selected was because you prefer it that way. That was the statement that concerned me. And so that's why I'm back to...
So I don't know... Wayne, I'm going to look to you. I don't know that in the time that I served with you, we ever considered how a right-of-way purchase was going to be conducted. So I need to learn more about this, but there's never been a time that that's happened. I think this is one of those things I think we found from your open records request, and now I'm digressing a little bit, that sometimes you hear things or take things not in the way they were said. I'm going to need to learn more about that. Deb, I'd ask you to help me dig in and learn about that.
Deb was the other party in the conversation.
Okay. Let me make one quick statement. On the outside looking in, I see a healthy dialogue taking place here. Legitimately, you have a supervisor that has some concerns, and she wants some clarity in terms of an understanding of how she's perceiving things and how things go. I believe those kind of internal discussions are always helpful to help clear up where you're going, where you hope to go, etc. I see this as a healthy process rather than a very negative one, because I've seen some give and take and a clarity of understanding. And I think sometimes we are so quick to assume the worst when we have situations presented to us in this manner. So I'm very encouraged that the discussion is basically taking place, because it is obviously a concern, and I would hope that as a department head or people who work directly with you as a board, and what I remember in the past, that they too feel like as a liaison they can come and share some ideas or suggestions that they would like to bring before the board at some point. They use us as a screening mechanism. And now we have two people, Director of External Operations and Internal Operations, as a connection between us that they can also use as a sounding board prior to it actually coming before the board, which I think is truly enhanced a decision-making process a little bit, because it's another way of vetting things and maybe having some other questions brought forth. And from my experience in the past, and I have to single Deb out and also Alyssa, as in your years as chair, and even though I have been here many years, they would then come back to me, even though they may have discussed something with you, and if they felt it was something that I needed to be aware of, she would just give me a quick informal thing about that. To me, I think that's what you want to have happen on a regular basis, before all of a sudden it comes to the full board for our discussion and involvement. And at no time it's ever, well, Rick told me that this is what he believes and understands. So I applaud those people for that. But I'm encouraged by the dialogue that is taking place.
Well, and in fact, what you described, Wayne, is exactly what happens on our current board. I mean, there's not a situation that I can think of where any information is kept from any one of us as we try to go about doing our job. In fact, just the opposite is true. Our staff works really, really hard to make sure that all of us have the exact same information. So we can come out, and clearly we have different viewpoints, I mean, which is a great thing, but we all need the same information in order to be able to express those viewpoints. Okay, so...
I'm good with three.
Okay.
The dialogue has brought out some
okay.
ways.
So we're good?
Okay, we're good.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Number four. Okay, given the fact that we all are equally overseeing as a board for our three direct reports, then I believe that we should equally participate in evaluating the performance and setting the goals for it. I listed our three direct reports.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Utilizing the process where both the preliminary and final review, which is what I understand happens right now with you, correct, Rick, that you have two different conversations with them?
With the chair.
With the chair. They're having with the chair right now. And that we have those at the board table with the employees being able to decide whether they be an open or closed session. And this last year, I feel we had three different processes happen. When I came, I don't know if it was late in January or early February, and Alyssa's review came up, and you brought it in to me like the day before you were going to have it, discussion with her, and, you know, said, do you have anything to add or comments or whatever? And I said, well, no, I've not worked with her long, and I trust whatever comments that you and Marty have made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So then the next review was done in June, and I then had a couple of comments to make. I wrote them on a sheet that was brought to me. Okay? And I did not understand that I was writing on the final sheet, okay? I wrote on what I thought was going to be then recirculated to all of us, okay? I thought I was providing internal. All right. So we're up here. The Director of External Operations decided to have this review in open session, all right? Then in the third situation, I was not asked anything for any type of comment about the third review, which is for our outreach and special projects manager. I was, in fact, the only way I knew it was occurring was that it was on your schedule and her schedule, so I could see that they matched up, okay? And after the fact, after everything had been delivered, without soliciting any comments from me, I was told, you said, well, yeah, it's done, and if you want to go see it, you can see it in human resources. So those are three very different ways of dealing with the three direct reports.
Yeah, so I think that's completely fair, and I think we ought to talk about that. And I'll say again, I think it's a really fair critique. So from my perspective, the way it ought to be happening is exactly the way the first one happened. When Story County started, Story County traditionally did not do performance evaluations. When we started doing it, at that point, Wayne and Paul and I decided that the best mechanism was to use these as a professional enhancement tool and really sit down and have a conversation, and that the chair of the board ought to be the one conveying information. And so you gather comments, much like we do on other boards and commissions that we serve on, right? The chair of the board gathers the comments, builds the evaluation, goes through the evaluation with the employee, shares that with the commission, or at least the appropriate parts of it with the board or commission, and then you move on. So in the first instance, I believe it happened exactly the way a previous board determined it should happen, which up until such time as this board takes action to change something like that, that's what we'll continue with, right? Then the second one came along, and my recollection of the second one is we tried to do exactly what we did in the first one. Mm-hmm. You made the decision that we were going to do it out here. Deb Shildroth then made the decision that we would not go into closed session because we were going to do it as a full board. You made the decision that we weren't going to follow that same process, and you were going to bring it up out here. And so it, based on your decision, we changed the process that we were using at that point. I think away from the most productive, beneficial process to one that I think has shown us some problems. And then the third one, Loris, and I don't want to go down this road anymore, but the third one has everything to do with we were not in a situation where it was appropriate for you to be involved with that particular employee.
I think now's a good time to once again remind everyone that I deny any source of
jurisdiction. Sure, absolutely. I get that you deny it, but we do have a legal opinion from our county attorney. You did, in fact, file the insubordination. I mean, there's parts of this that you cannot deny. You can try to distance yourself. You can try to blame the system. You can try to blame others. But there's parts of this you cannot deny. And the reality is some of the issues that you seem to be having right now are a direct result of the decisions that you made. And I'm ready to move on. I'm so excited that most of this meeting has been trying to move on. But this is one of those instances where you're making points about things that happened that were a direct result of your decisions and your actions.
I'm going to once again, not only do I deny that I have ever participated in any discrimination, but I also am going to emphasize that I do have shared my opinions as an individual supervisor. And also, just in case you aren't aware, I guess now is the time to tell you that I have asked for, under Iowa Code, clarification of the county attorney's legal opinion from the county attorney. So now let's move back to the present here, okay? And let's talk about that the three of us providing written comments, which is how the first one worked, okay? There should have been nothing to preclude that then from the third evaluation. I would have had no contact with that person directly. The comments would have been, hopefully, if we'd all three then looked again at those, have been approved, okay, mitigated, whatever you wanted to do, and you'd have had that conversation, I get, with the employee. So the analogy on the third one I really contest. So coming back now to what I'd like to see happen in 2018 is that since all three of us are equally responsible for the work product of them, they are equally responsible to us, it is appropriate that we have an evaluation system where we all three weigh in equally on the evaluation process. That's my
opinion. And I think I'm in complete agreement with you, Loris, if your definition of equal is what we did the first time last year, where everybody has input, it is shared in a less formal environment, which can only happen. So if the three of us gather, it's a formal environment. Mm-hmm. Whether it's open or closed, it's a formal environment. It is shared with the employee in a less formal environment. It's really used as a professional development kind of tool. That's what I believe, and I'm still standing by, was intended when we went to this performance evaluation system. That is where I think we get the most potential good out of it. But if you're asking that we go back to, you gave three examples from 2018, three different ways of dealing with it. I am absolutely ready to say the first way we dealt with it was exactly the appropriate way, and that's what we should continue with everybody weighing in equally, everybody making their comments, but then I believe it falls to the chair of the board to sit down and have that one-on-one conversation with our employee and share where those are, have the conversation. So are you and I close to on the same page then?
I think we're close to the same page. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear Marty weigh in on this.
We have a form that the chair uses to conduct the interview of the employee. I would say I would start there. Not necessarily. As we come on the board, we are adopters of processes and institutional practices that are done prior to us. We weren't elected here to come here and redo everything. I think some success is has been demonstrated. I have the comfort in adopting a process that I've used in another capacity. Board chair, we best. Two elections got Rick Sanders into that chair. An election of the public and an election of our board. And that said, he has the ability to conduct himself in a way that he was, I think that you built the process with the previous board. You are an implementer of it. I see success in it and comfort in it. You rightly point to Alyssa's review. We had input. It was done in a way that's supportable. I think you've had the conversation, I don't need to add to it, as to where we fell off the path. Once again, I don't want to hit this too hard, but it needs said, that which you did, choices that you made, led to why you say reviews 2 and 3 were not successes. And I'm not trying to beat you up on this. I'm just saying it is what it is through your choices and your actions.
But he says they my choice happened in an environment, okay? And with that, I'm just going to leave it, all right?
It's still your choice. And so let's deal with number 4.
Number four.
I am committed. So the intent with our performance evaluations was what you saw from the first evaluation. I'm committed that that's the process we're going to use this year. Is that sufficient for you for number 4?
I think it provides the opportunity for all of us to give input, good and bad, to see what each other are thinking. This would be maybe a question for Alyssa, maybe a question to go back to the county attorney. If we are, in fact, circulating that document in draft form, is that allowed? It's been allowed apparently so far. That's how you've been doing it?
Because it's just getting input. So that would be the chair of the board getting input from the other. You can't take any action there, right? There can't be any action taken, but you are absolutely allowed to give your opinions in a document like that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's a workable compromise for me.
Well, yeah. I don't view that as a compromise. I view that as going back to the way it was intended to be, and I think that's outstanding. What's next?
Okay.
Oh, Nancy, go ahead. Try to have a little passion this time, Nancy.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of modest.
I apologize for talking so loud, but you know that I do get passionate about
this. Yeah, I know you do. Speak into the microphone.
I've worked very closely with the Board of Supervisors and other department heads since about 2007. Mm-hmm. That's a tad long time. Okay. Because I was on the Planning and Zoning Commission, I really have gotten an even more intimate look at the workings of county government. Okay? Right? I'm not sure, here's my thought. Another way of evaluation, quite frankly, is at budget time. Right? You folks hear from the head of those groups as to what they accomplished this year and their goals for the next fiscal year. They outline their needs to complete these projects, internal personnel, and outside help as an example, and provide a potential budget to do all that. You then make a determination as to what their budget will be, and the group works with that, making changes as the group needs to. How much more evaluation could you possibly want?
Okay. Thank you, Nancy. Well, okay, so we got through 4.
Okay.
We got a meeting that starts in 1 minute.
Yes, we do.
We're going to be a little late for that, but let's endeavor to get through this as quickly as
possible. About supervisors voting on appointments and assignments for the various staff, that's just to offer consistency and clarity. We've done it on some situations. We've not done it on others. The most recent was when we had the Healthy Life Center discussion. We had consensus that Deb would remain as our representative, but we never voted on it. We have voted like on the census.
So I'm going to suggest that there can't be consistency there because every situation is a little different. And it is possible for our department heads and staff members to choose on their own volition to serve on a board and commission and without any input at all from us. It's also possible that we can staff out a particular situation. And then finally, as you point out, it's very possible that we could appoint somebody to those. I think there's three. I think it really depends on the situation, and so I would be reticent to put a blanket statement out there like that. But I think we should always err. If the board wants to have a conversation about something, let's have a conversation about it. But let's deal with it on its face.
Okay, and I do it on its face as long as it does come to the board that we're not that back to who can assign an individual.
Right, but in this case, it wouldn't come to the board if one of our employees decided on their own that they wanted to serve on the Boys and Girls Club.
Oh, no, I'm talking about internal.
If it's internal, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And the only caveat that I put there, Laura, is there are times that as part of somebody's job description, it most closely fits into their bailiwick. And if it's just a staffing a certain group, then we have them staff it as part of their job description.
Staffing as part of their job.
Okay. All right.
Serving on, board members can serve on internal workgroups or project teams from inception through final approval, and then that board member can vote. We've been inconsistent on this. I was asked to leave the website redesign work team because I would be voting on the result. There were 20 people on that work team, so regardless, I mean, I certainly had plenty of witnesses, okay? And this was, by the way, before there was any situation that elevated tensions in June or July. Meanwhile, Supervisor Chitty has served from beginning to end on the secondary roads sheds project and voted on it, and now also he is sitting on the multi-use shed design project for land on 210th Street. So I'd just like to see that there's equity as we move forward.
Yeah, and so I would just suggest that this board has the authority to ask somebody to serve on one of these internal work groups, and it also has the authority to ask somebody to remove themselves from one that internal work group if it's not going well. And I'm not pointing to any specific example, but this board always retains that ability to govern itself.
This board didn't vote on my request to remove me, though.
Okay.
There was no discussion.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about anything specific.
All right.
But all I'm saying is that we ought to be part of most of those internal work groups, and there are times we shouldn't be, and it depends on the situation. As it presents itself, and I would hate to do anything. This board retains the authority to make those decisions or unmake those decisions.
Okay. And then the last one has to do, we already talked about sharing information. Okay. Talked about notifying alternates so we make sure that we are being represented. The county may still be represented at the meetings. And also that that alternatives have the right of first refusal, or that's an awkward term for what I'm really looking for, which is that we make sure that if someone's not able to attend an event or something like that, and there's an alternate for that particular board, that person be asked first before we send off somebody else.
Yeah, and so do you want to talk about a specific there, or do you not want to talk about a specific there?
I don't have a real in this particular situation, it was the chair, you asking Marty to attend an overnight in Columbia. Okay.
As vice chair. Right. That was not an AADC event.
Okay.
I knew that's the one you were
right.
pointing to. So let's just be clear. I'm the representative of the AADC. You're the alternate. Okay. So I think generally I agree with this if our representative is not able to attend something that needs to be attended for that group, that the alternate ought to try to attend.
Right.
If not, then we'll make another decision. But I figured that was the one you were pointing to. That was entirely about, it was first of all, it was a chamber trip, not an AEDC trip, but that was entirely about having the vice chair representing Story County, not somebody representing the AEDC.
Right. And from a practical standpoint, just to make it clear why I didn't go any further on this one, is that I would not have been the person to stand overnight with a bunch of people who are going to go up and down stairs for a day and a half. That's not my forte. That takes care of everything on here.
Okay. So I'm hearing no action is necessary.
No, I think we've worked it out.
We're doing what we did.
I would just use this as a point of clarity. We often get invites through the mail to do attendances.
Right.
I mean, are you talking about each one of those that you were looking to implement a process to say, here is an invite to this library event, or here is an invite to this community event, and they come to the board as a whole. I mean, you're saying that rises to the level that you want to see us on a participation basis, one of us, all of us, some of us, or an alternate?
I think all invitations that come to the board as a whole, I guess, come through Rick, and then, you know, he let us know, right? If we, I think, you know, I invited everybody to CFR groundbreaking. You've invited us and said, hey, this is happening at this time. So that type of thing is informal. No, I'm talking more about when there's a formal type of activity that is occurring and
I can't think of an example. I can't think of an example from 2017.
Other than this one?
That's the one I felt right. Like you were talking about.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Hopefully you understand why I do that
different. Okay. All right. So, you explain yourself.
So you brought this forward. You want to make a, so I'm hearing that there's nothing on here that now we need to do taking action on. Do you want to make a motion anyway? Do you not want to make a motion?
No,
how do you want to dispose of this?
I think that we have reached compromise and explanation. As I said in my cover letter, this was about hopefully misunderstanding if we adopt them. Formally, I don't know that that's as productive right now as us talking about the situation here at the board table. So I'm comfortable with the discussion. I'm comfortable that staff got to hear this discussion.
So tell me this, what are you seeing on here that you think there's been some kind of change? I mean, so I'm hearing that, I mean, so the one that we talked about, that we're going back to our original practice, mm-hmm. What we started in 2017,
correct.
That's the only thing I hear in here that there was anything different. Everything else,
I think going up to also the duties of the board chairman, we had good clarification what fits under G. Okay.
But no change.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying on these nine items, mm-hmm. There's no change except the clarification that we're going back to our original method, the original 2017 method of doing our evaluation. Is that right?
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
Do you want to do anything with this, or can it just die for lack of a motion?
It can die for lack of emotion. That sounds cold and hard when we read it, but okay.
Well, it was a good discussion. I appreciate Wayne's insights on historical basis.
Thank you, Wayne.
We were well served.
So
thank you to
one
the
other
public.
Thing is I got ready for this portion. So I pointed out a couple times my affinity for Iowa Code 331. I did some additional research and actually put together last year in January of 2017, ISAC has a manual. The title is A Manual for County Supervisors of Iowa. It's about 110 pages long. I read through it. I think it is outstanding, and I will share that with you as well as an additional resource.
Hey, thank you very much.
Absolutely. So we're going to hold Jerry Moore, since we're 8 minutes late for our next meeting. Jerry, you come back next week and give your report. Let's go to public forum number two. Members of the public, your opportunity to comment on anything you want. Thank you so much to those of you who stuck this one out.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing no one move the microphone. Any liaison assignments? Marty.
We referred to it earlier, drainage district issues are rising to the surface that have taken off hours to try to mitigate. I got an email on my private computer from somebody asking about Grant 5, which I don't know how they found that. It's not that big of a well-circulated address. I walked in yesterday. We're doing the budgets. Can't go wrong on CICS. Going to a meeting here if we can get out of the next one. And we're going to have discussions with the CEO in regards to business and succession planning.
Super. Thank you, Boris.
The only one I think I really need to bring up now is I did have a conversation with Vanessa Baker Latimer from the City of Ames. We had appointed her as our representative, subject to the city approval, and it turns out that she stayed in force, that we don't need to go back to the city to do that, and it will be probably several months before she steps down and has to deal with the changeover.
Okay. Outstanding. So I need to give notice that we have a public meeting No, that we just need to give notice that we're going into union negotiations on January 12th. None of the board members will be involved directly in those negotiations, but several of our staff members and an outside contractor will. And that will be at 8 a.m. on January 12th in the assessor's conference room. And is that open to the public, really?
For the delivery of the board.
Just for the delivery? Okay. So notice is given on that. Did you need me to do anything else, Alyssa, or is that it?
It's posted.
It's posted. There's full notice. If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All of the papers say aye?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Oh, yeah. Right down in